Welcome to the First Intuition podcast. On this episode, we talk to Greg Taylor, captain of Cambridge United Football Club and AAT distance learning student. He chats through how he handles his life as a professional footballer alongside his studies. As always, we recorded the session in front of a live Zoom audience, and if you'd like to join a future session, you can register for them in the show notes. Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the First Intuition podcast. My name is Ben Bullman, and I'm joined again this evening by my good friend, tutor, colleague, fellow director, Dave Malthouse. Good evening, Dave.
Evening, Ben. How are you this week?
Okay, so regular listeners will know I'm suffering from a broken ankle. They might have known hot off the press when we recorded last week's episode. I'd gone back to the consultant who wasn't happy with how the ankle joint was healing and suggested I had an operation. The good old NHS took over and I got the appointment through. So I've had the op. I had that last Friday. And since then, I have really been confined to the sofa resting. I've got to go back next week. And hopefully they will say it's now in the right place and everything is healing as it should do. And I can start the next stage of recovery. But I've had a bit of a feeling sorry for myself a few days on the sofa. Although I have been working, I did teach a Zoom class from the sofa. I've been doing a few calls and a few emails and a few meetings.
So, and someone that's just commented in the audience really wants to know, Ben, how did you do it again? So, I mean, this massive injury that has caused no end of issue, really complicated. Sounds like you must have been doing something quite heroic, I imagine, to have done such damage to yourself.
I could embellish a story upon everybody. Every time I tell this, Dave, it gets sillier and sillier. I was with my daughter on a big inflatable water park. You might have one near you. Imagine a massive bouncy castle with slides and jumps and drops in the middle of a lake. And I wasn't even doing any of the more dangerous stuff. I'd done all the drop slides. I dived in from the top. I was literally just running on a straight bit, slipped over, and my leg went underneath me and crunch, I broke my ankle. I have had to tell that story on numerous occasions. It's amazing, actually. When I was in hospital, I kept relaying it to all of the nurses and all of the wonderful porters that were moving me around the hospital. And a load of people said, oh, we've seen that place. We want to go there. And I have to give it a glowing endorsement. As soon as my leg is fit again, I would be back on it in a heartbeat. Me and the girls had a great time, but it is what it is. So there we go. Sorry, there is no better story than that.
That's my favorite story, Ben. I like that story.
How's your week been, Dave?
My week's been good. I'm a single parent for this week because my wife is working away, and she's been working away since Monday to then, so I'm looking after kids kind of in the evenings and the mornings, stuff like that. It's quite good. I'm quite enjoying it. I don't know if the kids are really enjoying it because I'm not convinced they are going to school in the proper school uniform every day, shall we say. It tends to be what can I find that looks like it might be a bit school uniform-y. So there'll probably be a letter back from the school by the end of the week that I need to dress the children more appropriately for school. It's good. I always kind of quite enjoy these kind of weeks. My wife goes, has to work away every now and again, and it's quite nice to spend a bit of extra time with them. I have found that my working hours have changed somewhat, so my working day tends to finish about 3 o'clock, and then it tends to start up again at about 8:30, and so I'm kind of doing this kind of a bridge today where it's a big chunk of work in the morning during school hours, then work in the evening. But other than that, it's really, really nice. I'm looking forward to getting to my wife coming back so that I can, I'm recovering from an injury, as you know as well, Ben, but I've been given the all clear to try some light running, but I haven't been able to go out on any light running because there's no one to look after the kids. So I'm hoping that when my wife gets back on Friday, I'll be able to go out for a little run.
Excellent. Talking of some light running, I'm not sure whether our colleague Stuart listens to the podcast. Stuart, if you are listening, many congratulations, mate. Stuart ran the London Marathon this weekend, which is a big achievement for him. And I just wanted to say well done, Stu. And hopefully, Dave, maybe me and you can get back to some running together. We did do a 10K together a couple of years back, didn't we? If my ankle gets sorted, we'll definitely have to go for a run.
What, do the London Marathon together?
Well, let's maybe the ballot is closed, I think, again for next year. And I think maybe that would be a bit early in my recovery, but maybe the year after, if we could go.
Okay, you're imagining this recovery is still going to take, although it's the London Marathon at the beginning of next year. I think it's probably going back to a normal time, isn't it?
We were talking before we came on air about class provision in Wales. Maybe we can combine it. I don't know if there is such a thing as a Cardiff Marathon, but we could maybe do a week of teaching and finish with a marathon in Wales.
See, I have that there is a race in Wales then that we could do. It's called Man versus Mountain, and it's a race up and down Snowdon.
Yeah, with my ankles, mate, I'm not sure I'm going to be signing off on that one, but we will see.
Right, somewhere nice and flat then.
Yes, yeah, flat works for me. We'll go and run the half marathon they do in Peterborough or something. That would be a good build back up.
And an audience member has already told us there is a Cardiff half marathon that we could do.
There we go. We'll look into signing up for that, and we will be tapping up the students for sponsorship if we do it, I am sure. Well, it's lovely to chat me and you, but we have got a special guest tonight, and I'm really excited about this one because I was born in Cambridge. I used to go and watch Cambridge United a lot when I was younger, although I am an Ipswich Town fan. But we are joined tonight by the captain of Cambridge United, Greg Taylor. So I'm going to say good evening, Greg. How are you?
Hi, guys. Thanks very much for having me. I'm really good, thank you.
You're in a similar boat to me, my friend, I think, where you're recovering from an ankle injury, aren't you? So before we came on air, we were comparing notes about rehabilitation and getting round the house on crutches.
Yep, I'm probably 5 weeks now, I think, after my surgery, so I'm a little bit further ahead of you. But yeah, getting around on crutches is not easy. Everything's in Tupperware boxes, so that you don't drop your food everywhere. So yeah, it's not easy, but yeah, slowly getting there, and hopefully I'll be out of my boot and crutches pretty soon.
Fantastic. Well, I hope the recovery continues to go well and you're back on the pitch at the Abbey Stadium before too long. But you're here tonight, not just because you are captain of Cambridge United and a professional footballer, but you're also undertaking your AAT studies, aren't you?
Yep, that's correct. Yep. Started them, I think it was June last year. So I've really kind of knuckled down with that. And yeah, I've just started my level four.
Fantastic. So you're making really good progress through the qualification already. And when I realised you were studying AAT, I thought, oh, we've got to see if Greg would come on and speak to us. Greg would be a guest on the podcast because I am fascinated in this dual world of being a professional footballer by day and a trainee accountant maybe at night or in your spare time. It sounds like some Batman story, doesn't it?
I don't know if it's as glamorous as that. But yeah, it's definitely something a little bit different to your average footballer, I'd say. But yeah, it was something that I was interested in kind of preparing after football. So I wanted a career to potentially step into. So yeah, I looked at the AAT and thought I'd give it a go.
Fantastic. Well, we'll talk more about that in a moment. But whenever me and Dave get a guest on the podcast, we like to go right back, because the listeners are genuinely interested in your background story. Dave always talks about your superhero backstory, if this was the Marvel film of your life. So very quickly, maybe you could talk us through what you did at school and then the decisions you kind of made and how your career shaped from there.
Yeah, of course. So, yeah, I mean, I did the normal schooling system, got to year 11, 15, 16 kind of age, and I was allowed to come out of school on a day release to go and train with the 18-year-olds and the first team for a period of time, so to get a bit of experience, which was it was good. It was always good to get a day off school, so yeah, that was brilliant. And after that, I kind of left school at 16, and I signed for Northampton Town and did a scholarship of 2 years, which is you kind of learn in your trade whilst doing, I think it's like a sports science course, because the FA put that on for lads who are obviously trying to be footballers, but if it doesn't work out, they have something at the end of it. So yeah, did that at Northampton, and I was lucky enough to sign a professional deal for a year, which I was over the moon about. And Yeah, that's kind of where my football career started off, really. After a year, it didn't work. I got released, which is part of the game. It's not great when you're a young lad because you haven't played many games at that age. But yeah, found my way back into the game with a few other clubs like Kettering Town and Luton Town. Played in a few big games and things like that. And yeah, I found my way at Cambridge United, and I've been there for 9 years, and it's been a good ride. And when I first signed in 2013, I think it was, we were in the National League, and yeah, helped get promoted into League Two, and last year we got promoted again. So we're in League One now, and yeah, that's where I'm at.
You've had some good times at Cambridge, haven't you, with the promotions? And also, I think back, I couldn't get a ticket, but a few of my mates did when Cambridge United played Man United in the FA Cup a few years ago, and you played in that match and managed to get a replay back at Old Trafford, didn't you?
Yeah, that was incredible. I mean, the promotions alone don't come very often in your football career, so I'm quite lucky to get two. But yeah, when you get the big FA Cup games and you pull out the draw of Man United at home, it was incredible. You've got all the big boys playing, and the likes of Wayne Rooney, and I think Di Maria was there, and Falcao at the time. It was just incredible. And somehow we held on and got a draw. So yeah, we got to play at Old Trafford, which is something that not really many people can say. And I kind of cherish that moment, and it's one of my highs in my career. The result didn't go our way, but just to play on the pitch with some of the world's best stars and in front of 75,000 people was a great achievement for me. And yeah, definitely one of the highlights of my careers.
Fabulous. So I suppose the first question we could start with is, as a professional footballer, you've got a lot going on. You've got a busy schedule. Why would you want to sign yourself up to study for the AAT?
Well, I mean, yeah, you've got the busy schedule. I mean, I finish training. I'm normally home because I live quite close to Cambridge. I get home for around 3 o'clock. So I have the time spare in the afternoon. But really, I needed to look forward and look at my career after football, because at my level of League Two, League One, you're not guaranteed to come out and not have to work again. It's not as glamorous as being in the Premier League, where you're earning the tens of thousands a week, and that isn't really a problem. At my level, you kind of have to plan. And like now, I'm currently obviously had an operation. So you just don't know when it's going to get taken away from you. So I thought the best thing to do was to plan ahead and look for a potential career or have some qualifications underneath my belt. So if it got taken away from me at the snap of the fingers, I had something behind me to get a job.
Was accountancy and finance something that you'd thought about earlier on in your career? Was it something at school? Presumably you were okay at maths.
Do you know what? It's really weird. I actually wasn't too great at maths at school. And to be honest, my sole focus at school was to be a footballer, which, I mean, if I could tell myself now back at that age to concentrate a little bit more in school, I would. But yeah, my sole focus was I'm going to be a footballer, and that's that. And I mean, I'm fortunate that it worked out. But yeah, I mean, my partner, she does finance. So I mean, she tells me it's not the easiest thing in the world, but yeah, I mean, I got a little bit of an insight in that. And a good friend of mine is an accountant for a Premier League football club. So he gives me a little bit of inside knowledge of what it's like, and it's a good career. So that's kind of why I looked for that. And obviously it's a recognized qualification. So I just needed that behind me, really.
I can see we've already had a question from the live audience in the chat box. So students are genuinely interested. You're funding the study yourself. You're doing this completely off your own back, aren't you?
Yeah. So I pay for the course. The good thing is with the Professional Football Association, the union that looks after professional footballers. Yeah. When you pass your exam, they actually refund 50% of your course fees, which is, it's been quite helpful. to get some money back. But they changed the way they did it to when you've passed and given proof that you've done the exams, and then they hand over the money. Because I think a few people cheated the scheme and enrolled and got the money back and didn't actually finish the qualifications. So yeah, it's always nice when you pass to obviously get the results, but then to get the check for 50% off, it's always good.
That's your win bonus then, I guess, is it, Greg?
Essentially, yeah. Yeah.
That's really interesting. And I know a lot of students have got the financial pressures of studying, whether funding themselves or even the ones where employers will contribute. Sometimes if they fail an exam, they have to pick up the bill. So it's something else that maybe just sharpens you up those days before the exam, just to kind of make sure that you are going to hopefully get over the line on the first attempt.
Yeah, I was really quite sure that whenever I went into an exam, I made sure that I was ready for it. And yeah, because I think they only, like you say, pay for one exam, and then I might have to foot the bill for the whole lot of next time. So yeah, I kind of made sure I was ready.
So something I'd like to touch on, because I know a lot of our listeners and a lot of our students are juggling study. They're not full-time students, just like you're not. You've got your career as a professional footballer. Our listeners are juggling their jobs with study, their family lives with study. How is that going for you? You've obviously got quite a routine with the football club, but how are you managing your own time outside of that to motivate yourself, as you say, 3 o'clock, to actually come home and do a couple of hours?
I mean, I try and stick to my afternoons as soon as I get in. So, I mean, I'm quite fortunate to get home at 3 o'clock. But that could be after a tough training session, followed by a gym session, then 45 minutes to an hour in a car. So I normally get in and have a coffee for half an hour, and then straight away hit the books for a good couple of hours, for as long as I can, really, without, until I get a little bit tired. And I kind of stick to that, as that is my afternoon. We train Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, and play on Saturdays. And if we have a game on Tuesday, then we obviously train on Monday and just play the games on Tuesdays. So Wednesday, I try and dedicate my entire day to studying as long as I can. So I kind of just have that set routine, in a sense of, right, whether I'm tired or not, I'm going to get some work done in the afternoon for that set couple of hours every day. And that's kind of how I've gone about it, really.
Is that discipline something that you get from that you kind of got through your kind of career training as a footballer, in terms of, or it sounds like almost that you put together your study plans like another training program. So, you know, alongside your coaching for football, you're now coaching yourself to get through these exams. Is there a parallel there?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, from the minute that I walk into the training ground, we have an hour spare to have breakfast and do some prehab work and stuff. But you get to 10:30 and then it's right, you're stretching, and then you're out on the grass, and then you're back in, and then you're in the gym at 2:00. So your day is kind of structured, and you know where to be and what you're doing. So I kind of just, yeah, I add that on into the end. And when I get home, I know it hits 3 o'clock, 3:30. I know I've got a couple of hours to hit the books until I can kind of relax in the evening and kind of wind down.
And it's obviously working, because you're flying through the exams by all accounts. So I guess don't change what isn't failing for you at the moment. It looks like it's all working quite nicely.
Yeah, I try to set myself a task of doing a chapter a day. So some of them are obviously a little bit longer than others. And then obviously when you take into consideration the question bank and things like that, that you go through afterwards, I try and set myself a chapter a day. But if I don't get there, then it's not the end of the world. But I like to just focus solely for the 2.5 hours, if I can, and get through it. Yeah.
I don't know about you, but I know we've talked about this before, and particularly I remember a year ago when we had Christian on the show, we talked almost nonstop about sport and football, and how we learn stuff from what we see in kind of elite sports and try and apply it to the things that we do in the classroom. And I don't know what you think, but I think it's just really interesting to hear from Greg's perspective that he's doing that himself. I always think things like, you need to be doing training regularly if you want to get good at stuff. You don't do one massive training session and expect to be, an elite footballer. You don't do one lesson and expect to be amazing at accountancy. And it's about those little changes that you make, the little improvements, getting better step by step by step by step and building up over time. I don't know about you, but I just found it really interesting that, Greg, you're not from academia, and you're not teaching, but you're applying the same sorts of rules that we look at. Because as I say, and this is really for anyone, if someone's really good at something, then I always want to steal what they do to be good. So if they've got particular techniques they employ, then if they work for the most successful people, they're going to work for other people as well. So we should kind of steal those and use them. Found it really interesting. Don't know, what do you think, Ben?
I think exactly right. I think we look around for techniques that work, inspiration, and I suppose Greg at the top of the tree as a professional footballer has had that discipline drilled into him by the sound of it from an early age when you're allowed your day off from school a week to go training with the bigger lads. And from then, I guess it's just built in you a culture of, I know I need to plan, I need to have a routine. Presumably you don't just turn up at a training session without someone having planned it in advance and thought, this is what we're going to do today. This is how it fits with what we did yesterday. This is how it's going to fit into the match. And that's something we do a lot, Dave, isn't it? Think about the exam as the match. You don't play full matches to practice for the match. You do mini drills, mini training sessions, which is very similar to the techniques we use with students to say, you need to be on your A game for the exam. But in the run up to that, you need to break things down, do things in smaller chunks, practice individual techniques as you're going along. I suppose the other thing I can hear, Greg, in the world of a professional footballer, it's quite a roller coaster, isn't it? You've always mentioned ups and downs already. Clubs maybe not renewing contracts, but then finding contracts other places, winning games, but also dealing with losing games. And I guess there's lots of life skills you've learnt there in your world of professional football that will be very useful for you in your studies and also for our listeners to hear, because students fail exams. And it's not about the failing of the exam. It's about, well, what do I take from that to go forward? And I guess that's similar with kind of dealing with challenges that you've had in your own career.
Yeah, I think that's definitely the case. Football is crazy. I mean, the highs are really high and the lows are really, really low. So we kind of get taught at football to kind of just stay in the middle, enjoy the success. But when you don't get the rewards or the success that you want, don't kind of overthink it. Don't worry. Learn from it, park it, and then kind of move on and try and improve. That's kind of how football goes. In terms of contracts and things like that, it's quite ruthless. You get contracts of at my level 1 to 2 years. Lads will have to move from one end of the country to the other. It's not as easy as just buying another house. Sometimes you've obviously got to rent yours out and you go and find somewhere to live, or you've got lads living in hotels 4 nights a week and things like that. So it's not ideal. I'm lucky I'm at home. I'm not far from Cambridge. So I have that luxury of coming home and being able to hit the books, whereas I appreciate other people don't have that, especially with family members. And if you've got kids and stuff like that, that's difficult. It's definitely a roller coaster ride. And I think I can and maybe transfer some of the skills over to the accountancy world. I'll have to see what kind of happens a little bit later on. But you do learn as you get older to kind of park the bad results.
Something I've just seen in the chat box, and I'm going to ask you now because it's a pretty quick yes-no answer. Do you enjoy the study? Do you enjoy it, or is it something that's a real chore when you're back at 3 o'clock and you've had your coffee and you've now got to pick up the books?
Some days I really enjoy it. if I've had a bad day at football, it's quite enjoyable just to forget it when I walk in the front door and pick up the books and chuck my head into that and kind of get distracted for a little while. Other days, if I've had a tough session and I'm shattered and I'm looking at the books and my eyes are just dropping, they're the days that I just close them and just think, oh, it's not happening for me today, because I'd rather give it my everything when I'm feeling good. If I'm tired, then there's not too much point.
I think that's something that a lot of listeners will be able to associate with, that feeling. And I've been there as well, where you think, I'm studying, but I'm not taking this in. I am just so tired. And it's being able to spot those signs as well, and hopefully planning your study around those. But having the perseverance and determination to just keep going for that extra 20 minutes. If there's just one thing you can take away from that session, it's worth it, isn't it?
100%. Just kind of just kept sticking in there until I got to the end of the lecture or something like that, or look at the next one, and it might just be 5 minutes. I might be able to just get that one in before my eyes are gone. But yeah, definitely, if you can get in as much as you can whilst you're kind of feeling fresh-minded, it's a bonus.
I'd be interested to hear Dave's thoughts on this one, but I wanted to touch stereotypes. Dave, someone once told me accountants have got quite a boring stereotype. I don't remember who it was that mentioned that to me, but is that something you've seen in your career, where almost I've been embarrassed at times to say I'm an accountant, because I think as soon as you say that, people think, oh, you're going to be quite dull, you're quite boring, you're quite numbers-based.
Absolutely. It's every single time I say in any social environment what I do, it is, if I say I'm an accountant, there's instantly a kind of a glazy look that comes over people's eyes, and they try and make excuses to not talk to me. If I have kind of gone into rooms and said, oh, what do you do? And I say, I'm a teacher. And then normally it then goes, oh, what age group? And they're really excited to hear whether I'm teaching like little kids or medium kids or big kids, because they, you know, they're all interested in that. So, oh, I teach adults. They go, oh, okay. What do you teach them? I teach them accountancy. And then the whole look goes down again. And they, you know, so yeah, it's absolutely. But I guess in your world, Greg, are there stereotypes that you have to overcome in terms of the way people perceive and view footballers, do you think?
Yeah, I think there's a big perception of footballers, unintelligent, stupid at times with decisions that they make. I mean, you see stuff in the press all the time, but you only see the bad stuff, is what I will say. And obviously a few silly mistakes here and there can cause a lot of noise and then kind of give you that perception of a footballer. But from my point of view, we do a lot of community work and stuff like that. So that stuff just doesn't really get noticed much, and it doesn't go in the press. Not that it should, because kind of Cambridge are quite big on the community, and there's loads of programs that they do, and they give us options to join in and things like that. So there's definitely an outside perception of footballers, but I wouldn't say that applies to all of us.
100%. And the fact you're giving up your own time to come on this evening kind of tells us that the kind of guy you are, and you are clearly not alone. I think you're right. It is the minority that give everybody else a reputation, and that can go in any particular field, can't it? You've obviously now got this dual persona, Greg Taylor, captain of Cambridge United professional footballer, but also studying accountant. How does that persona go down in the dressing room? Do the other lads know you're training to do accountancy?
Yeah, so a couple of the boys know. We've got obviously a wide range of ages in the changing room. You've got 18-year-olds to I think oldest is 39, and he's the only one. There's not many that get to that age. So you've got a few that, like myself, starting to think about life after football. There's actually one lad who's is similar age to me, and he's doing his law degree, which is brilliant. And you've got the younger ones that go home and play Fortnite for 4 hours after training. So you got a real mixed bag. But yeah, the club are so supportive of it that we go and do some work and work on our education. And at times, if I can't really get an exam on my Wednesday or my day off and I need to leave a little bit early or something like that, the manager sometimes gives us a little bit of leeway to head off early. So that always works.
That's something else I'm sure lots of listeners can associate back to, finding time to do the exams and having a boss that is supportive there and can be a bit more flexible. I'm interested to know, Greg, have they got you in the offices at Cambridge United posting up some purchase invoices yet on the system?
No, and I think they're probably glad that I'm nowhere near it as well. they haven't. But I mean, it's something that I will be probably looking into, just to kind of get a feel for the other side of it. I mean, you can obviously do the books and the exams and stuff, but I mean, I've got no real experience of being in an office environment and kind of putting the work into practice, really. So as I kind of move through it, I might ask for the odd day on my day off to pop into the office and kind of have a little look and see what it's like.
So I'm almost imagining some kind of scene, a bit like kind of when you were like first given the call that you were going to make the first team, you know, back in the Northampton days, in a similar thing, you get called into an office and say, actually, you know, we think you're ready to step up to the accounts team now, and then move you into the office and get you to do some reconciliations.
I think I'll be the only person that has like a half-time player contract, but also contracted to do accounts on the side. So it could be a first. It could be a new role.
All joking aside, though, Greg, is that something you could foresee in your future, the blend of your experience as a professional sportsman, your knowledge of the workings of a football club, linking to finance? Would that be the ideal scenario, do you think, for your future career, maybe?
Possibly. I mean, in my opinion, I've got the best job in the world. So to find something that's going to match up to that is going to be difficult. So if I can find something that's interesting, which obviously I take an interest in football, if I could get a job in finance in football, it'd be brilliant to keep myself really in with football, but obviously in a different capacity, because I would like to try my hand at something different. The lifestyle of a footballer is... it's good, you have your benefits, but there's a lot of sacrifices to be made that go unnoticed, and they're small, like in terms of your weekends, your set period of 10 months throughout the season, you get told where you're being at a certain time, and you don't have an opportunity to kind of say, well, I can't really do that because it's my missus dad's birthday on that day. Them kind of excuses don't really run. Everything gets dropped at a hat and you're there. Christmas, it's a big sacrifice. The amount of games over Christmas is incredible. And I'm fortunate enough to only have been in Christmas Day once, because nobody really wants to come in on Christmas Day. But yeah, Boxing Day and things like that, and New Year's Day, they all get taken up. So to kind of leave that and go into something different, I'm kind of looking forward to it.
I think we'll go to some rapid fire questions if we can. I think one of the first ones is exams. Do you get nervous before an exam, similar to nervous for a first team match, or are you pretty level at both?
For a game, I'm not nervous at all. Not at all. I'm probably the most relaxed person ever. I sit in the kit man's room with a cup of coffee until I'm literally about to go out and then go and do the warm-up. But for an exam, a little bit more, because this is new to me. So, and learning from home, I think is maybe a little bit more challenging to know whether I'm applying myself and taking in the knowledge well enough. I get a little bit more nervous for an exam than I do a game,
You're honestly saying that you were less nervous preparing to go out and play at Old Trafford and mark Wayne Rooney and stop him scoring than you are doing an indirect tax exam?
Maybe not that game, because I could well get embarrassed on live TV. So that maybe not that one, but an average Saturday game, then I think exams are a little bit more nervy for me.
I love that, because that's something that I imagine loads of people listening to this would just be sitting there going, it really relating to it, because you know the one, you know, if you're doing an exam once every 3 months or something like that, that one exam is something that, you know, really you build up to, and then when you actually go into the room, it is one of the most nerve-wracking experiences that you're likely to have. So it's really refreshing to hear that You know, even, you know, no matter what walk of life you're from, what job you got, you still go through those same emotions.
And the game at Old Trafford was on the back of a 0-0 at the Abbey Stadium, wasn't it, Greg? So you'd obviously kept out the front line of United for the first match. So I'm sure you had nothing to fear in the second match.
Yeah, I think we were just waiting for the goals to come in the second match. We knew we were about to hold them up for much longer.
Next question linked to the exams. Something else that we hear lots from students is rituals or things that students do the day of the exam, the night before, that just become habitual. I've heard from students that will do the same breakfast. They'll have the same routine. They like it if the bus is 5 minutes late the morning of the exam, because last time it was and they passed. I know footballers have got lots of superstitions and rituals before matches. Have you got any for either a pre-match superstition or an exam one?
For a pre-match, I get there early to the ground. I'm there way before everybody else, probably an hour and a half before, and just kind of chill out, have a coffee, listen to a bit of music, and then sit with the kit man and just wait for the game, really. I don't do too much. I maybe have a set routine of stretches that I do, but other people have got crazy things like putting on one sock before the other and certain shin pads or being in a certain place in the line where you come out. So people have that. But for an exam, not too much. I kind of found myself that after I did the first one, I wore the same pair of jeans into the second one. And then after the first one, I booked it quite early in advance. And then I found myself worrying about the exam for a week or two. So I got to a point of where I'm quite lucky. My test centers always have times available at the kind of a click of the fingers. So I got to the point of where I was booking my exams the day before, towards the evening, and then just turning up the next day, early morning, to kind of get rid of the thought process, the worry or anything. So I just booked it and that was it, done. So that was kind of my ritual, I think, just booking it late and turning up the next day and doing it.
I don't know about you, Dave. I've got visions of me and you being at one of our institute dinners and there being a charity auction for Greg Taylor's lucky jeans.
The worst bit is they actually split once, and I said to my partner, can I still wear these in the test center? Am I going to look scruffy? And I actually wore them, like I would not take them off.
While they're working, keep it up. Final question for me on that rapid fire round is, when you get your result, obviously it's relief, excitement, disappointment potentially if it's not gone well. Do you see similarities there with the kind of reaction you have post-match as well? Is it a similar, which one gets you pumped up most, getting your AAT login to see competent for that unit or getting the 3 points for United?
I'd say they're similar. In the car on the way home, I'm refreshing the app constantly to see when the result is coming through on my phone on the statement of achievement. And when it does come through and it's positive, I genuinely celebrate in my car like I've scored. It's a similar feeling. It's not quite the same feeling because scoring a goal, I can't explain it. You just can't replicate that feeling. But it comes close because I find it quite a big achievement because it's something new for me. And to kind of get the answer or reward that I want at the end of my hard work, I get that good feeling.
Well, as always, we're getting towards the end of this evening. Dave, while we've got Greg, is there anything else that you'd like to find out about?
No, not really. I mean, the only thing I just wanted to say is that, I guess it's more of a statement, but I guess I could try and form it into a question, that a lot of things you said today, where you talked first of all about being when you were released by Northampton, and you know how then you know you then didn't have a job and you had to find another contract, and that's something that footballers, you know, you're living on these 2 years, two year contracts, you know, if you're lucky sometimes, and then potentially you could be at the other end of the country. Obviously you talked about some of the experiences you've had playing big games, and you mentioned about celebrating a win and obviously the lows that you find. And, you know, you might, as a footballer, you kind of live it, you seem to be kind of like living with a lot of uncertainty, a lot of highs, a lot of lows. And, you know, one of the things that really struck me that you said at the beginning is that it could be taken away from you at any time, you know, due to injury. How do you think you're going to cope going to, you know, a job that doesn't have that? You know, if you get a job in finance, most of the time you've got quite a secure role and they've got to give you a notice period. But generally, if you don't mess up, you're going to be okay. And you don't have massive highs and lows. You don't have a win at the end of every week where everyone goes out and celebrates because you've won. Or, you know, everyone's feeling crestfallen because they've lost. Do you think that you'll make that transition okay? Or are you concerned about it at all?
It's a good question. I think there's positives to transitioning into that kind of job role, in a sense of you get the stability, which is difficult. Being a footballer at this level, you don't have that stability. So you know you have got the job for a certain period of time. That isn't kind of in the back of my mind. And every training session, I have to perform to a standard every day. I can't really have an off day because somebody can get bought in and replace me. So yeah, that can be difficult. So to kind of transition into a situation where I would be a little bit more comfortable and know that I have my job, that I am looking forward to that. But I don't know if on a Tuesday and maybe a Friday, or because they're not going to get a match day in an accounting role, I am going to miss that high. I am going to miss the last minute winners. And celebrating with the squad, with the lads in the changing room afterwards. I don't think I'm going to get that in the office. I might be wrong. You guys might tell me different. But yeah, that will be hard to lose. But I suppose it's just a learning curve and kind of finding ways to kind of, in a way, get that feeling in the job role, whether it's hitting targets or things like that, small achievements.
I tell you what, Ben and I get those highs every time our students pass exams. You know, we live it through our students. And, you know, I think that, you know, there will be a role where you can get those kind of results if that's the kind of thing that really spurs you on. It might be, as a few people have suggested and we kind of alluded to, it might be working in finance for a football team. You know, and, you know, you still are part of that machine. You're not on the pitch, but you're still doing something to help that team deliver. So I'm sure that if that's something that really drives you, I'm sure there is a role out there. You know, as I think we say to lots of people, don't we, Ben, that, you know, that finance gives you a route into so many different types of career. You know, you can be an auditor working in a practice firm that Ben talked about last week, or you can be, you know, leading a tech company, you know, somewhere and taking them through an IPO, which, you know, is massively exciting, but it just gives you so many different routes into different places. So I'm sure that you'll find something that meets you. And all of the things I talked about in terms of the challenges you've gone through, all of those things, the skills to cope with that kind of level of uncertainty, they're just transferable to every industry. You know, I want someone that can cope with uncertainty, someone that can deal with things changing at the last minute and doesn't completely lose it. You know, and you've got all of those skills. So I don't think you'll have a problem finding a role. And I think there's, you know, if you take the time finding the right kind of role, yeah, you'll be, I think you'll thrive in a career in finance.
And maybe look for an employer that's got a good staff canteen, because I'm sure you're well fed as a footballer at United. So you can shop around there a bit and see if you can find someone that's got a good chef on site that can cook you some breakfast in the morning before you start work.
To be honest, it'd be lovely if I had that. And also I could hit the dessert a little bit more rather than right now. I've got to be a little bit careful. But yeah, that would be brilliant.
Greg, I'm going to have to shoot because I've got to go and do an AAT revision class because we're recording this live on a Wednesday night. So I'm going to say bye-bye and thank you so much. But I'll leave you in the safe hands of Dave to wrap up. Listeners, thank you again. This week, we have passed 1,000 downloads for the month. We've now had over 14,000 downloads for the podcast in total. So keep downloading, keep sharing, keep sending us reviews for the podcast. But I will hand over to Dave and say good evening, everybody. And thanks again, Greg. You've been a great guest on the podcast.
Thanks very much, Ben.
Thank you very much, Ben. My favourite comment in the chat box that I had just missed is that you're likely to get the same kind of highs that you get from winning a football match when you get your trial balance to balance, or when you get your bank reconciliation to balance. And as an accountant, I know the immense satisfaction that you get when you go through that reconciliation and everything does balance. So there'll definitely be somewhere where you'll get those kind of feelings again. But I like Ben, I'd like to thank you very much for taking the time to be here, Greg. It's been an absolute pleasure to speak with you. I think you've been an amazing guest, and as you've seen through a lot of the comments on the chat box, I think the people here today have really appreciated it. Everyone that's listening on the podcast, thank you so much for downloading. If you can give us a review, if you can leave a comment, it'll be much, much appreciated. But yep, thanks a lot, Greg, and hopefully we'll see you again soon.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me. I've thoroughly enjoyed myself.